Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast. My name is Amanda Rocchio, previously Amanda Meixner. I am best known for my meal prep and nutrition content. And today I'm here with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and my husband, Chris Rocchio.
Hello, everyone. And before we get started today, I wanted to read you a quick review from one of our listeners. This one is from KMurph445, and it's a 5-star. I always listen right away when Amanda and Chris release a new podcast episode. They thoroughly research the scientific studies on the health and fitness topics they discuss while adding in examples and tons of practical tips. They also frequently bring in experts in the field. The way they present the information is thoughtful, fun, and engaging. I love how they focus on a multitude of ways to improve health and well-being and acknowledge that no health tip is a silver bullet. They emphasize that balance is key, and I love their healthy and motivated lifestyles. Amanda's Instagram has been such a great source of inspiration for me on healthy snack ideas and HIIT workouts. And hey, that's what we're trying to do. So that's a beautiful thing.
Yes. Thank you so much for that review. And if you could take a moment, pause this podcast, write a review. I know you've been meaning to do it. Now's the time you're going to do it. And it means so much to Chris and I. It really helps spread the word about our podcast and keep us going. Speaking of healthy snacks, you know, one of my new favorites is Organifi chocolate plant protein. I seriously can't get enough of it. We actually ran out on our trip to St. Louis right now, and I'm a little disappointed. I think it's your fault, Chris.
I brought 2 tubs. So you're the one that goes and takes at least 2 a day. So I at least have whey protein to have after my workout. But you tend to flock towards that, even though I'm telling you to have whey at least.
Well, because honestly, this tastes better to me, like straight up.
It does. I mean, it's technically like a dessert in the middle of the day. And, you know, we're always recommending a high protein diet for our clients. And our listeners, I mean, it helps build muscle, helps preserve the muscle when we're in a caloric deficit, like when we're trying to burn fat. And as we're always saying, muscle mass increases our metabolism. So it's important to keep lean muscle on your frame, and that'll keep your metabolism up and help you burn more calories throughout the day. And if you look at the ingredients, it has a long list of vitamins and minerals in there. It's practically a multivitamin. I mean, not only does it have A, B, C, D, and E, which support basically all bodily systems, but we also have a wide range of other vitamins and minerals in there that have a multitude of other benefits and uses within the body. And on top of that, it has enzymes in it to help you break down and utilize these nutrients more easily. And another reason why I like it is because it uses multiple soy-free and gluten-free plant sources for its protein. And one last thing, I know a lot of people who have looked into plant proteins and stuff like that, they're concerned about heavy metals, which is a concern in a lot of the name brand proteins. You'd be surprised at which brands make the top of the list, like the top 5 list for heavy metal content. And Organifi contains barely detectable amounts of heavy metals, and the amounts contained are no more than you would find in any plant or even organic vegetable, because all plants contain minute amounts of heavy metals. I mean, that's just the reality we face in the modern industrial era. But any amount of heavy metals in the product are far, far below the maximum amounts allowed by Prop 65 guidelines, which are pretty strict. So that should alleviate a little bit of your fears.
Well, you know, Chris is getting into all of the sciencey stuff, but for me, and come on, ladies, you out there too, I love that I can get a chocolatey drink that only has 2 grams of sugar, you know, and 3 grams of fiber and 20 grams of protein. So I feel like I'm having a little treat, but really I'm doing something really good for my body. And I know you'll love it for that reason too. And you can check out all of our favorite Organifi products at Organifi.com/masteryourhealth. And use our code MASTERS for 15% off all their products, including our favorite chocolatey protein shake.
So moving on to today's topic, we're going to talk about the 80-20 diet versus the restrictive diet approach. And we're also going to touch on some research relating to these topics and how they relate to you and possible success when approaching these diets. But the main idea that we're trying to get across to you in this podcast is that flexible control in your diet is much better than rigid control. And we're going to get into what that actually means, but more particular when it comes to the psychological effect and the sustainability of certain diets, because, you know, if you're setting yourself up to fail and because your diet is too restrictive, then that's not at all a good approach. So, I mean, you're better off not even trying it because you'll set yourself up for failure and then you're going to just give up. So first off, some of you may have heard me say this before, but we don't really like to use the word diet when referring to specific nutrition plans. Of course, the word does refer to what we are generally ingesting. Like if you ask, explain your diet to me, we're talking about what you're eating in a given day. But when referring to a specific plan, say for weight loss, we don't really like to use the word diet because it implies the idea that we're feeling deprived, that it's restrictive, which can lead to failure in the long term, like I just said. So get that meaning or implication out of your mind as we get into this, when I start referring to the 80-20 diet. And it's just, we're using it as a specific approach and not something that means that you're restricting, so to speak.
Absolutely. And to piggyback off of that, we also wanted to talk about that term clean eating, which is often used to refer to eating super restrictively and only eating a list of these clean foods or foods that are deemed healthy. So something to consider when we're talking about healthy eating, that it also depends on the person and it depends on the group you're talking to sometimes, because certain groups will say meat isn't clean. Another group might say eating processed protein powder isn't considered to be clean, while another might say that grains and dairy aren't really considered to be clean. So first of all, the definition in general can be a little bit blurry. So that's why we always encourage you to take an individualized approach and make sure you understand what works well for you, your body, and your lifestyle. Now, this podcast is primarily about shifting your mindset from an all or nothing restrictive style of eating to a more flexible mindset when it comes to your nutrition. So instead of following a rigid diet with a green light on some foods and a red light on the rest, we really wanted to explain the benefits of going into your diet, approaching it with this 80-20 mindset.
In the 80-20 diet approach really refers to getting 80% of your calories from whole foods and 20% of your calories from processed foods, desserts, and things like that.
I like to call my 20% of my diet fun foods. You know, that's another good term you can use when it comes to, you know, having some fun with your diet.
So yeah, when we say fun foods, we're talking about pizza, gummy bears. Well, those are two of my favorite, and those are definitely in my 20%. Amanda's a little bit more 90-10. I'm more in the 80-20. Kind of depends on where you feel comfortable at. And it's not, and this by no means is a rigid thing, but you also don't want to make sure you're not drifting into the 60-40 aspect, especially if you have a specific goal in mind, like if you're trying to gain lean muscle or if you're trying to lose fat. So, you know, you can play with it a little bit, but just not too much. And it might actually take a little bit of tracking at the front end of this, but we'll get to that later. But yeah, I mean, I personally try to make room for my days of like pizza and gummy bears. And I try to have those on like very active days, you know, my leg day, my chest and back day, maybe, you know, when we do our beach workout on Saturdays, things like that. Well, when we were doing our beach workout, now I try to make up in some other form. That's still been shut down, you know, ever since the beginning of this pandemic. So we're still waiting to get that back into a full effect. But most people know that eating a whole foods diet, which are typically more nutrient dense, can make you feel fuller and more satisfied, and it can help you hit your fitness goals. And that's one of the main reasons why we choose this approach, because, you know, you're not going to be snacking as frequently in the day and not going to be constantly going in and checking the refrigerator to see what's there, even though you just checked it 30 minutes ago and it's still the same thing in there that you did when you checked it 30 minutes ago. So that's another little hack, is that like getting high protein, some good fat, and not spiking your insulin all day and having it crash to where you get those cravings. That's essentially the main idea of this. So this also includes lots of fruits, vegetables, lean protein, whole grains, and lots of water. You also want to drink tons of water on this. It's also really good because the same hormone that signals hunger also signals thirst. So you want to make sure that you're not thirsty when you're getting those cravings. And like we said before, that taking that approach that's overly restrictive has been shown to be unsustainable. So being 100% disciplined with quote unquote clean eating is very difficult, because like we said, who defines clean eating? And unless you're living in a bubble where you have no outside influence, it's almost impossible to do. Or unless you're like a competing athlete and you have a coach and you have something you're really striving for. Because let's face it, I mean, if you want to be social and not all of your friends or significant others are going to be on the same rigid plan, you're either going to fall off or you're going to feel guilty for not having your friend's birthday cake, or you're not going to be having as fun because you're like, oh, I can't have this alcohol because my coach said that this is in the bad food category. So we like this because it gives you a little bit of that leeway. And not only has this been more sustainable in my experience, but also has been shown to be more sustainable in my clients, and has been shown to be more sustainable in the studies we're about to show as well.
I know, I was also just thinking about the other night we went to a friend's barbecue, like very small outside group of people, and Chris was eating a hot dog, and his friend was like, why are you eating a hot dog? Really? You? And he's like, you know, I'm hungry. I want some other food. And just an example, like Chris has fun, I have fun. Like he said, he probably has a little more fun with his food than me. But I've said this time and time again that also being with Chris kind of got me to explore food and let go of some of the guilt I was maybe holding on to a little bit too much. I mean, I still like to fall in that 90-10 category. So if you catch me on the wrong day, I'm probably saying no to some of those desserts.
But I know I'm constantly saying, here, have some of that. You know, like the other day, I was like, have some mud pie. You earned it. You earned it. Because she does earn it, you know, and that's the main thing. That's the whole idea, is that if you're, you know, she does take that 90%, that 80% approach. And so, you know, I have to remind her sometimes to take that 10%, to take that extra 20%, treat herself.
That mud pie was worth the extra 10%. It really was. It was so good. I think it's like Oreos and pudding and just all the good stuff. Yeah. If you're going to do dessert, like, do it right. I mean, sometimes I absolutely love making healthier desserts from scratch, and that's awesome. You can make them taste really good, but then it's fun to have the Oreo cream stuffed cream cheese dirt cake. It was really good.
There was something childish about us like hovering over that bucket. It was great.
Well, I remember because I used to order those dirt cakes as a kid, and it would come with the worm, the gummy worm every time, and you all excited like, oh, the gummy worm and the dirt. But anyways, that's a little bit of a side tangent. So I've talked about 80-20 on my Instagram a little bit, and I usually get this question. Is this like an exact like math equation? Like, should I calculate my meals? Like, do I calculate it by calories? And we just want to say it's more about a general mindset trick. So it's not really supposed to be exactly calculated out. It's more like, okay, you know, 80% of my week should look like whole foods, or day should be very minimally processed, nutritious foods. And that leaves room for that 20% of fun. So you kind of know when to say no or when to say yes to things, or maybe, you know, what nights you want to treat yourself and like plan accordingly around kind of this mindset trick. So again, it's not an exact math equation. And also a nice fun thing about this 80-20% mindset is that you can kind of make it a little bit flexible. For example, you go on vacation and you want to switch to 60-40%, knowing that you should definitely have some nutritious foods in your day and not to just eat junk food all day, every day, because you're probably not going to feel good. But again, you know, being flexible, and while you spend the majority of your year in this 80-20 mode, you know, you can also have some fun on vacation.
Yeah. And you don't actually have to do it like set out in every day where like today I need to get 80% of my calories from whole foods and 20%. You can do it day by day, but you can also do it, split it up within the week, which we'll actually talk about a study about how, about why we're actually suggesting this because of the results of the study. But you can do, say, your discipline during the week, and then you can do your splurging on the weekends. And so you can have a little bit more like your alcohol, your pizzas, the fried foods when you guys go out and have like get togethers and get appetizers and things like that. So as long as it you can average it out in terms of the entire week and not just have to do it within the day, which I think is a great little adjustment to give you even more freedom within this diet.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, an example of this, of doing it within a day, would be like a whole day of nutritious foods. And then you like to end your day with a piece of candy or some chocolate. And so that would be your 20% at the end of the day. And then, like he said, if you do the weekend approach, obviously, you know, you have some alcohol, maybe go out to eat a little bit more, but be careful. It's not about a weekend binge, right? Because then you start getting into these like crazy fluctuations. It's more about giving yourself that 80-20 so you don't feel like the need to binge, and it's more of a controlled, like, I went out to eat and I had some drinks with my friends and you're having fun, but it's not this crazy blown out of proportion weekend that actually probably not only messes with your goal, it might leave you feeling very sluggish.
Yeah. And there's also a couple little caveats to that, because you also want to make sure you don't want to flip the script and have it, you know, 20-80, to where 20% of your diet on the weekends is whole foods and stuff like that. You want to still be incorporating those into your diet because they are satiating. They are nutrient dense. You still need to get your protein intake up if you want to preserve that muscle mass. So there's still a little bit of control over the weekend, but you know, you don't have to be as rigid. And on top of that, say you're having a night where you're going all out and you're eating everything in sight and you're drinking a lot. Well, your body prioritizes metabolizing alcohol before it even touches metabolizing the food. And so say you're drinking all night and you have a whole bunch of food in there. Well, that food's just going to sit in there and ferment and not get broken down and not digested properly because your body wants to get rid of the alcohol first. Yeah, and on top of that, there's a bunch of things that mess up your metabolism with this. I mean, poor sleep can make you as insulin resistant as a type 2 diabetic for a day. Drinking alcohol can mess up your metabolism, like I said, and then chronic stress from lack of sleep can mess up your digestion. So completely destroying your body in this weekend warrior mindset does have the fallbacks. And so just because you're allotted this 20% doesn't mean you can go crazy, because it might just offset all the progress you made during that week. So make sure that you start off kind of controlled in this and get your bearings in this diet before you start experimenting with how much leeway you can give yourself, especially if you have a specific goal. Now, if you're just trying to clean up your diet because your diet is absolutely all over the place right now, you're not getting nearly enough protein, it's a bunch of refined carbs, you're drinking a lot, things like that, it's a good way to just clean it up and not have to track too much. But if you do have a goal, we do suggest starting off at least tracking what you're eating, so you see where you're at right now, and then seeing where you need to make an adjustment, because you actually might already be eating like this and you were never even planning for it. So you never know until you actually write it down. And then once you do that, it doesn't mean you have to track it like crazy into the future. I mean, we do recommend those things, but as soon as you have an idea, it gives you a baseline to reference as you move forward. And then another pitfall is overeating healthy foods, because you know you're eating whole foods and you think that, oh, I can eat these ad infinitum. But that doesn't mean that those whole foods won't put you in a calorie surplus. I mean, I can sit down and eat a whole bag of pistachios, and I know that'll give me over 1,000 calories if I'm not controlling that and eating those in moderation. So make sure that you're keeping an eye out for that.
Absolutely. I think, you know, a certain more whole foods, but still a little bit processed, is like nut butters can definitely be a calorie,
Definitely.
I don't know what to say, a calorie hole, or I don't know what the right, I was trying to come up with a metaphor in that statement, but you know, peanut butter, almond butter, it's really easy to go for that 2-3 tablespoons and all of a sudden you've added like 500 calories to your day. So just watch out for that, or things like adding too much oil, or, you know, healthy fats in general are wonderful and an important part of your diet, but also you need to watch your portion on them.
Yeah. I have a problem with olive oil and bread, because olive oil is good for you, but I'll probably have a half a cup of olive oil if I'm not careful. So,
I mean, you're Italian, right? So you're like 50% olive oil.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I just dab the bread on my forehead. A third pitfall that you can run into is, like we said before, is obviously overeating indulgence foods. So most of these, you know, indulgence foods, or at least some of them, are hyper palatable. So, you know, you can eat a ton of them and they're not nutrient dense. And so you don't feel satisfied. Your brain's not telling you, hey, I got what I need, stop eating. So, you know, like for instance, like I can sit there and eat a whole loaf of bread before my brain tells me to shut it down. So that's why I eat the meats with it, to make sure that there's some satiety signals going in, and I leave the meal feeling much more full.
Well, wasn't there some kind of donut story you told me where you ate like way too many donuts and got super sick from it?
Oh, I used to do it like regularly. I'm not even bullshitting, like, because I lived right down the street from a donut shop, so I would smell it on the way home every time. I would be like coming home from the gym and I would smell it, and I would stop and get like at least a half a dozen of chocolate long johns, right? And that was always my go-to. It wouldn't be any other ones, just a half dozen chocolate long johns. So I'd take it home, I'd say, hey, this is gonna last me a couple days, I'm gonna have, you know, a couple today, a couple tomorrow, and before I know it, they're all gone and I am like absolutely sick, you know, like I'm seriously sick to my stomach and like, I'm never doing this again. And then before I know it, coming home to the gym the next day or 2 days later, I re-up with another box of donuts. And so, yeah, I used to be addicted to that for sure.
I definitely did that with those animal circus cookies in college. I wouldn't get them often, but whenever I got them, I just ate them until I felt sick. So I was like, okay, I need to figure out a way to portion this better, because I do not feel good after eating too much of those. So that's also a good reminder, if certain foods are triggers for you and you just cannot find any control with that. I mean, eventually you do want to get to a place where you can be more controlled with that food, but that would be maybe something that you could remove for a little bit, enjoy some other fun foods that you feel a little more stable around, and then add that back in as you kind of gain control of your diet.
Yeah. And I know Amanda said earlier to, you know, try to start off your day with the healthier foods and then go towards the indulgence foods later on in the day. But there is another little trick you can do. And I agree with that too, because you don't want to start off your day with a huge insulin spike and you'd be on that roller coaster, like I said before. But the trick that I do, and the one that I recommend to my clients, is having the bulk of your carbs directly after your workout. Now, I wouldn't put most of my fat. I would, you know, put fat before the workout and later on in the day, but I don't want to put too much fat around the bulk of carbs directly after your workout. And I won't get into the nitty gritty about why, but the reason is because you are the most insulin sensitive directly after your workout. And there's a much higher probability that glucose that gets converted to glycogen gets stored in your muscles as opposed to stored in fat cells. So that's one of the main reasons why I like to strategically put it directly after your workout. And I know there's a lot of people who talk about the nutrient timing, and there's a debate over that, but there's multiple studies and researchers who have proven that. So that's one of my techniques. And I think maybe you should try that and see how it works for you.
So if you're wondering what should the 80% be exactly, and what are some ideas for the 20%, we want to kind of break it down a little bit more and give you a list for kind of like a baseline. Now, we know everyone's different, so this might not apply to every single one of you, but this is a great baseline list when it comes to an 80-20 diet and how to set it up. So now would be a good time to get out your pen and paper, or if you're on your phone, take some notes on what would be considered 80% and the 20% of your diet.
So like we said before, you have, you know, pasture-raised animal protein. So that'd be like pasture-raised cows, chickens. You have whole or plant-based foods like fruits and veggies, seafood rich in omega-3s, whole grains, fermented dairy. So that would be like some cottage cheese, Greek yogurt, and kefir. And monounsaturated fats from like nuts, seeds, olive oil, things like that. And lightly processed foods such as like, you know, vegan or whey protein, something like that, to add into your diet to get a little more protein. So the more indulgent foods that you'll have in the 20% of your diet, those will be things like foods that are high in saturated fat, you know, like fried chicken, ice cream, pizza, breakfast cereal, alcohol, white sugar, refined carbs. And the cheese thing, that's kind of like a debate over whether or not you think it's clean. Some people think that cheese is one of the worst things you can have in your diet. Other people, it agrees with them very well. You know, personally, I have no problem with cheese. Other people, when they cut it out, they at least experience a little bit less of a problem. And Amanda is one of them. So that's really just depends on you. And you can adjust this however you see fit. Or if like you're one of the hyper responders to dietary cholesterol. I think it's like 25% of the population actually is a hyper responder. So your cholesterol level actually does change with your cholesterol intake, unlike 75% of the population where you'll see no change. Then you may want to make additional adjustments, such as like, you know, your pasture-raised animal protein, it will depend on the cut of meat. So for instance, like a ribeye is going to be higher in fat than like a sirloin steak, things like that. So you can adjust accordingly depending on where you're at and how much you know about your physiology. But yeah, I just want to throw that out there.
Also, something to look out for when it comes to cheese, Kraft Singles, for example, is only about 51% cheese, or that's why it's called a cheese product. It's not actually called cheese. So you really want to look for high quality fermented versions. I try to buy organic cheese, or, you know, cheese from grass-fed cows when I can. I'm a huge fan of mozzarella, so I definitely incorporate some cheese. And again, cheese is fermented dairy, so it can also be more tolerable to some of the people that are lactose intolerant. So see how it sits with you. And for some people, again, dairy can cause acne and other issues and bloating. So that's where, you know, a huge question mark on dairy is just how well you tolerate it, and also going for those higher quality versions of dairy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm partial to like mozzarella and burrata and things like that, but whatever your go-to is.
So I wanted to get into some of the studies we researched for this topic. And so study number one, which group would you guess was more successful in their fat loss journey after 16 weeks? The group that had bread in their diet, or the group without it, keeping all other things constant? So according to the study, they lost the same amount of fat, but the group that didn't have the bread dropped out at almost 4 times the rate as the one with bread. They had a much higher likelihood of sticking to the plan if you actually incorporated the bread into the plan. So this is kind of showing you that maybe putting too many foods off limit can really hinder your adherence to your nutrition plan. Mm-hmm. I know Chris, being Italian, he loves his high quality sourdough. So it'd be more of a question to you of finding high quality versions of foods that you love and not eliminating foods that you absolutely love. So maybe that's not bread for you, but that might be a handful of chips every day that you have with your very nutritious lunch or something. So really consider what you need to keep yourself motivated and able to stick to your nutrition plan. So another study on our list talked about flexible control versus rigid control. And the flexibility or rigidity relates to meal timing, so where it fits into your schedule, your goal deadline, and how you view foods in general. That means you shouldn't view foods in a dichotomy of good or bad, right? It's more of a spectrum. So flexible control was associated with less frequent and less severe binge eating and a greater likelihood of successful weight loss during a 1-year period. So this is really something to consider when you're going into a nutrition plan is, yeah, it's pretty easy to do something for 1 week, right? We can go super hard for 1 week, be super restrictive, but in terms of what's good for us long-term, that's where this flexible dieting really comes into play. Flexible control was also better at maintaining weight loss for over a 3-year period, which is awesome. So the weight stayed off at a higher success rate as well. And this is a major concern because a lot of people who do crash diets that are super restrictive gain it all back. I think there's like a pretty high stat of how bad, you know, the diet mindset fails people time and time again.
Yeah, we go through a lot of those stats in our reverse dieting podcast.
So yeah, this is really just some studies to back up what we're saying when it comes to 80-20 and having a more flexible mindset.
Yeah, we can also further prove this point by showing a couple studies relating to treat meals or cheat meals or refeeding, whatever you want to call it, versus continued caloric restriction. I mean, Amanda likes to call them treat meals. You know, I still call them cheat meals, but like in terms of the actual industry, whether talking about bodybuilding or meal plans for athletes, they're typically called refeeds. But whatever term you use for them, we're just going to use all of these terms interchangeably. So the first study is called the Matador study. And you had two different groups. One group had a continuous diet, so they were in a constant caloric restriction for 8 weeks. And the other group dieted for 2 weeks and then came off the diet for 2 weeks and stayed at a maintenance level. And the group that cycled on and off, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, actually lost more fat than those who continuously dieted.
Wow, that's super interesting. I would never guess that. I would only guess that because we talked to Dr. Jade, you know, a few weeks ago, and he kind of hinted at why you wouldn't want to like stay in a calorie restriction for too long.
Yeah, but I mean, it's especially this considering it was only 8 weeks. You know, it's not like a 6-month time frame where people are constantly dieting, you know, and then so the researchers actually think that this has to do with the hormones that regulate metabolism. So the traditional theory in the cheat meal model, which is like you going very disciplined the entire week and then you have one cheat meal, was that that was enough to like boost your metabolism and get it back to, you know, a regular level and not be slowing down as a result of the prolonged caloric deficit. But, you know, these researchers actually concluded that one cheat meal is not enough to boost that metabolism, that you need at least a couple days straight or maybe an entire week, and that being more effective than just one cheat meal per week.
Right. And just to get this clear, obviously, in this one, they did a calorie deficit for 2 weeks and then a calorie maintenance for 2 weeks, right? So it's not this huge fluctuation. It's just adding in a bit more calories, probably a little more wiggle room. You know, that's the difference there versus like calorie deficit and then I'm splurging, just going off the rails, yeah. Right? I think that's an important thing to emphasize. But it's also a great thing to emphasize because a calorie deficit can be so taxing, mm-hmm, for too long. So it's kind of awesome to see this research to back up, you know, 2 weeks calorie deficit, 2 weeks maintenance, and how you can have more progress on that.
Yeah, especially if you're not adjusting your workout. Because if you're in a caloric deficit and you're still raging, like your body's not recovering as efficiently, it's not getting the nutrients it's used to getting. And so you're not getting the glycogen replenishment to your muscles that you're getting. So you're not going to be as explosive. Those stores aren't going to be readily available for you to utilize during your workout, all these different things. And so you have to dial that back or else you're going to have like more cortisol buildup and things like that. So all these things relate to, you know, less recovery and possibly some injury in the long run, or you just getting burnt out. So the second study on refeeds is actually slightly different. You had two groups. The first group was on continuous caloric restriction, and that was at a 25% deficit. The second group had 5 days of a caloric restriction at a 35% deficit, but then 2 days at a maintenance level. And so they're essentially calorie cycling in a sense. And so they had the exact same workout, exact same protein intake, but the only difference is that the second group, the cycling group, consumed extra calories in the form of carbs. And the initial results are somewhat misleading if you overlook the details of this. So group two, the calorie cycling group, lost 3.2 kilograms of overall body mass. And group one, the continuous caloric restriction group, lost 3.6 kilograms of overall body mass. So at first you'd think that the continuous dieting approach is more effective. But like I said, you look at the details and then you look at the difference between muscle loss and fat loss, it tells a different story. So group one only lost 2.3 kilograms of fat compared to 2.8 kilograms lost by group two. And in terms of fat-free muscle reduction, group two lost 0.4 kilograms and group one lost 1.4 kilograms. And group one also lost more than 9 times more dry fat-free mass than group two. So overall, control group lost more muscle and that contributed to the higher loss in overall body mass, because as we know, muscle weighs more than fat. And another biomarker they measured was metabolism. So the refeed group, group two, didn't slow down their metabolism nearly as much as a result of the caloric deficit. And like we said before in the reverse dieting episode, we've already talked about how being in a prolonged caloric deficit will start to slow your metabolism. And this is because your body will be more efficient with the calories to prevent prevent starvation. So researchers believe that being on a refeed for 2 days straight, as opposed to just doing one meal, puts the brakes on those hormonal and enzymatic changes that typically occur in a prolonged caloric deficit.
That's super interesting. Again, obviously, this is another example where it's like very within a controlled range, where it's like 2 days on maintenance level. But, you know, that's a lot of hope for us out there who don't want to always be in a calorie deficit, or you're really feeling the energy levels lag when you're in a caloric deficit. So I love that there's a new approach to, you know, staying within a caloric deficit where you do it for 5 days and then 2 days you go back to a maintenance level.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually done that before and just by experimenting and not even knowing there was a study on it. So
you're like N of one study.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't do it exactly like that, but it's somewhere around that for sure.
Right. Right. I mean, I miss our pizza runs in LA.
Well, first off, like just to explain how I've done it in the past is that if I'm trying to gain lean muscle, I will be in a surplus on my training days, but stay at maintenance level on my rest days. So it's basically some smaller things. It's not exactly like what they're doing because it's a deficit and then maintenance, right? But you know, it's cycling nonetheless.
So last thing I wanted to touch on is how being overly restrictive with your eating can lead to an unhealthy mindset. So if you know me, I've talked on a previous episode about my anorexia eating disorder that I had in high school. And while I've made a full recovery, it's super important to me to consider those things when approaching my diet and also when I talk to other women about what's a healthy approach where you're still being mindful but not overly obsessive. So there's actually a term for overly obsessive eating patterns called orthorexia. Orthorexia was a term established in 1998 and refers to someone having an unhealthy obsession with food. An example of a person who struggles with orthorexia, they might focus on clean eating, fad diets, and overly obsessive food planning to the point where your health is suffering because you're so stressed out, mm-hmm. you're anxious about it. It's basically all you can think about all day, and it's really getting in the way of your life in general. So we don't want this to be confused with having discipline and being able to say no to things when you want to make changes to your diet, because obviously it's going to be a little harder in the beginning. It's going to take some practice and some work, but you basically want to get to a place eventually where you're being mindful, but not overly obsessive, right? Mindful about what you're eating, but it's not all you're thinking about all day. Mm-hmm. And when you have that slice of pizza or that cookie, you know, you don't leave feeling super guilty.
Yeah. And I think that this mindset actually helps with that because you're training yourself to be okay with that. And it's a great kind of leeway if you have experienced, you know, some symptoms of orthorexia before, if you have the mindset, you start seeing a little bit of the traces of the mindset, this can kind of pull you back from that and start kind of like what I did with you, being like, hey, this is okay. You can have this pizza.
Yes.
You can have this dessert.
Yes.
You know, so.
Absolutely. No, I definitely appreciate you for bringing the fun back in my food.
That's and
in
my life. Gummy bears.
But I also think it's an important reminder that if you're around people with unhealthy habits or, you know, super unhealthy lifestyle, that you will be a lot more disciplined than them. So that can feel odd. But that's okay. That's not what we're talking about. You know, I think, like we said, it's a great thing to be mindful. And, you know, I am the weird person at the airport bringing all my food with me. And like nobody else is doing that. But again, if this is getting in the way of your life, it's adding to your stress, you will want to reevaluate your approach.
Yeah, it's always about checking yourself and making adjustments if you need to. I mean, that's what we're always about. Like we said, we're not about the rigid one-size-fits-all plans. Everybody's different. And we all have different backgrounds, different genetics, different lifestyles. So we're all not going to take to certain things in the same manner. So that actually brings me to my conclusion, at least some points that I wanted to reiterate and hammer off here. And that's why tracking your calorie and macro intake, at least at the beginning, is a crucial tool, because you can assess where you're at and make adjustments. And, you know, Amanda's the meal prep master. And so we think that meal prepping is the best way to start, because it gets you on the right track. It makes sure that, because you've already bought the food, you've already prepped it, and you're not going to just leave it in the fridge and just go spend money on something else. I mean, I've done it before, but I don't justify it. I'm always get mad at myself if I have to throw away one meal prep because I ate out. I'm pretty mad at myself. So there's that little, that factor. So the meal prepping is, in my opinion, an invaluable resource, especially if you're trying this and this is a new thing. And obviously we know time and money is a factor. It does take time to meal prep. Lean cuts of meat and whole foods can be more expensive than processed foods, depending on what you're getting. But they're definitely not more expensive than takeout or going out to eat, which have hidden calories in the form of oils and certain sauces and things like that. So all in all, we do realize that there might be a little bit of adjustments to budgets and things like that, but it's not too big, and we still think it's a win in the long run.
Absolutely. And honestly, if you know, while we definitely encourage buying organic fruits and vegetables, if that's not in your budget yet, you know, just getting whole foods is mm-hmm. such a win, and you can definitely, you know, go to grocery stores that are a lot more budget friendly.
There's definitely ways to make it work, and it's still cheaper than eating out every night or doing takeout every night. So do some of the things that we suggested, or all of them, and let us know what you think. Maybe you have success with it. Maybe you find your own way and your own approach to this that's slightly different than this, but works for you.
Absolutely. I mean, it's probably one of my favorite places to start when it comes to beginners and approaching your nutrition plan is this 80-20 mindset. And, you know, life's all about having fun. Chris has his gummies. I like some pizza, a little bit of ice cream, of course, dark chocolate, which you could say fall. It depends on what chocolate you get, right? It falls into either categories. But we really hope you like this episode, and we'll catch you guys on the next one.
Yep. See ya.